Welcome to a special Brand Strand episode of the Good Listening To podcast with me, Chris Grimes, the podcast series that brings you The Clearing, where all good questions come to be asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. And Brand Strand is where I wrap an episode of the podcast with its strong storytelling construct around a particular company or individual to amplify their company or personal brand. Who are you? What's your story? And what do you do? So yes, welcome to a GLT Brand Strand, and we're recording, please. And we're recording, and welcome to the Good Listening To podcast, the podcast series that brings you The Clearing, where all good questions come to be asked and all good stories come to be told. And I'm the author, presenter and curator of a very special place I like to call The Clearing, which I've already mentioned. And today we're doing a Brand Strand episode wrapped around this wonderful man, Malcolm Stern, who is an author, creator, curator of his own outstanding curated space, which is alternatives.org.uk. It's got an illustrious gallery of the holistic universe, which he can tell us more about very shortly, but it's a great pleasure. Malcolm Stern, welcome to the Good Listening To podcast with me, Chris Grimes.
Thank you, Chris. Lovely to see you.
You too. And how's morale? What's your story of the day? How are you?
How am I? I'm somewhat frustrated. It's quite hard to have let go of running groups. I'm so used to traveling all over the world and running groups. That sounds very flashy, but actually I loved the experience of going to China, the experience of going to Greece, the experience of working with a community in La Gomera. And suddenly I find myself sort of doing bits online, yes, quite a lot of one-to-one work. And so I'm having to look at my own frustration and actually trying to find meaning in the simpler things of life. That's my practice today.
Lovely. And indeed, you are a very calm personification. Despite the frustration, you look very chillaxed, if I may say so.
Thank you, Chris, as do you.
Wonderful. So it really is a pleasure. Alternatives.org, it's an illustrious gallery. I'm very flattered that actually, I don't know if you know this, but I'm actually on the website too, because I ran Instant Wit Laughter Lab within the curated space of Alternatives. And so I'm feeling incredibly privileged that I'm now getting to speak to the man who's created the whole, I call it a universe, because it is a very profound place of holistic, spiritual, mind-body connection. How would you describe it?
Well, it's really interesting that, you know, we think about there's this big thing that's now, 39 years old.
Wow.
So there's this big thing that I created, but actually a whole train of circumstances led me to a scenario which allowed things to unfold. So in 1982, I was dancing in something called the Cosmic Celebration with Pir Vilayat Khan, the head of the Sufi order. And it was the story.
No one's ever said to me I was dancing in that particular way.
Well, I was dancing as an angel, actually. But I'm not a professional dancer. It was an amateur thing, but it was beautifully done. It was the story of the masters, saints and prophets throughout history. And it was done at this church in Piccadilly called St. James's Church. And the rector was Donald Reeves. And this was an amazing production, which showed the life of the Buddha, showed the life of Muhammad, showed Zoroastrianism, showed the whole spectrum of spiritual and religious life. And Donald Reeves, the rector at the end, came out and said, every church in the land should have a cosmic celebration. And I thought, wow, well, this is a very open-minded Christian rector. And I said to him, are you interested in having a series that explores what was then called the New Age? He said, yes, I've got a plan to light seven lamps, the lamp of healing, the lamp around philosophy, lamps around music, and there's a lamp around the New Age. And so, yes, I'd be very interested to have that. So we started doing this small, regular meeting place. Half a dozen people would come. We'd explore spiritual ideas. And bit by bit, it grew. And then finally, I bumped into this guy called Roger Houston, who ran the Open Gate Trust. And he was bringing all the big Americans over. They were just starting to come into London. And he said, this is all about synchronicities. This happened in time. So he brought all the Americans over. And so suddenly he's saying, well, can you put on the talks? And then I'll run the workshops for them. And you give us a kickback from what comes from the talks, which was perfectly good, because we would get sort of up to 500 people coming to these talks suddenly in the church. So people like Ram Dass came and did his thing in London. People like R.D. Lang came and did his, he was in England, but he did his thing. Thich Nhat Hanh, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a lot of the big players started to come across and do their thing at alternatives, and it grew. And then because it had this regular Monday night slot, we kept the momentum going, and it's gone through quite a lot of transformations over the years. But
I know this is the wrong religious reference, but the church in Piccadilly became the sort of mecca for all this to happen.
Yes.
Where everyone, like moths to a flame, came to the seven, as you say, lit torches. And I went to an event myself, so I know exactly the context. I went to an alternatives event and observed one immediately before I did the Laughter Lab thing. And you still, to this day, have three candles that you light before each speaker. Do you want to just tell us a bit about that?
Well, there are a number of rituals we have to bring the talk into play, to get people out of their everyday space that they've come from, the rushing, and to enter the oasis of St. James's, which is Wren's favourite church. It's a very beautiful church. So we light three candles. The first candle is for love. You're bringing the essence of love into each heart that's there. The second candle is for wisdom. So we're looking to embody and to have the speaker embody and to have the audience embody the receptivity of and the connection with wisdom. And the third quality is the quality of the speaker's choice. So the speaker then chooses something they want. It's often something like compassion or unity, or it can be all sorts of things. But so there's like three candles. And we also take a silence. We take about 3 minutes, where people just settle down and slow down into the rhythm of the church. And then we create some community by having people turn to someone they haven't come with and sharing what their day's been like and why they're at this talk or whatever it is. And you get such a buzz that's going from that. I often feel we could have a whole evening on that. But you get a buzz from that and you get people feeling connected. And then at the end, there's a closing and sort of then we offer food. And so people can actually sort of go and buy a very cheap meal and sort of hang out with people, so that there's some sense of community is formed.
And by the way, what I love there is the obvious segue of community spirit, because you're giving the spirit of ceremony, of presence, the flames. Yes. And it resonates so beautifully, even in the title of this podcast, resonates the good listening to, because of letting our thinking unfold. I'm just noticing you're such an instinctive storyteller, and I'm loving this. I'm feeling a sort of warm heart glow as I talk to you.
Thank you, Chris. It's lovely. I am, because I think life is all our history is stories. Everything is stories. You know, when we're sharing with a partner, we're sharing our story. You know, and when I wrote my book is full of stories. Some of my three books that I've written, but they're all full of stories.
And I know that your most recent and probably most profound and poignant book, forgive me, I haven't read the other two, but the Slay Your Dragons with Compassion has come from a painful genesis as well, which I'm sure you may talk about as well.
I'll talk about anything, you know, that's my thing.
And just before we get into sort of the seismic stuff as well, because of your link to alternatives and the alternative world of healing, I know that also in your story, the Rainbow Warrior was a ship you were on with Greenpeace back in the day. So Rainbow Warrior has some, I'm not talking about Greenpeace at this moment, I'm just thinking about you as a storytelling entity. There is something about you as a Rainbow Warrior, if you like.
Well, yes, it was more of a sort of like a learning what it was to travel with warriors. So I put on a concert for friends. I was working for Friends of the Earth. I was an estate agent and I was so bored with that. And then I took acid, and I only took it once. And it was very different then. And this is definitely not a pro-drug thing, but something happened in me. And I'm sitting there with my friends and I'm saying, my God, the universe is not what I thought it was. And they're going, you're stone man, you'll come down in a bit. And to this day, my friends still feel like I never came down from that trip. But what happened is my mind expanded. And I'm not recommending this, because I think meditation is a far better and more solid way of expanding our minds. But my mind expanded, and I started to see things in a very different light. And I could no longer carry on being a state agent. So I was looking to find things that had meaning to do my work in. And these were the days when you could pick loads of jobs. It wasn't like you were having to scrabble for every job. So I worked in a Whole Foods store for a while. I worked in a terminal cancer hospice for a while. And then I took a job on as a voluntary coordinator for Greenpeace, sorry, for Friends of the Earth, for a whale day. And I was going to put on this little event, and I knew quite a few musicians from my sort of various exploits over the years. And I knew Van Morrison's band quite well. Some of his band were old mates. I'd grown up with them. John Alton, who's the saxophonist, Pete Van Hook, the drummer, Tony Marcus, who's the fiddle player. She was a lover of mine. In fact, Van Morrison walked in on me and her making love once, which is, anyway, another story. But
we all had that happen.
Yes, of course, of course. I got involved with this Whale Day. And then one day I picked up the phone in the Friends of the Earth office. And this guy said, I want to talk to you about nuclear power in Stroud. So I'm chatting away to him. And I said, can I send you some details? What's your name? He said, Mike Oldfield. I said, are you Mike Oldfield, the musician? He said, yes. I said, oh, I'm putting on a Whale Day in such and such a time. Would you be interested in performing? And he said, well, I haven't done anything for 3 years, but if you could get my friend David Bedford to join me, I'll do it. So I knew David Bedford. Whoa. I contacted him, and Mike Oldfield became the starring act of this Whale Day. And suddenly it was on the ITV News at one. And my father, from thinking I'd been an absolute failure for not being an estate agent, suddenly thought, oh, my son's on the news at 1 o'clock. So he became much more adapted to it.
And if I may, there's some more prime real estate in that as well in your father's mind.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what he'd be thinking. His thing was very much, if you make money, you're a success. That was his philosophy very much. And anyway, so we had this enormous event and Greenpeace offered me a job. And so I was working with Greenpeace for 2 years doing publicity for them. And I sailed on the Rainbow Warrior to Norway when they were trying to stop seal cull. I sailed with David McTaggart, who was the founder of Greenpeace. And he was the man who'd been blinded trying to take pictures of nuclear testing at the Mururoa Atoll by the French. Yeah. And he was a swashbuckling character. And
so there were other temporary people. Blindness, you're talking about permanent blindness in doing this? Or
permanently blinded in one eye.
Wow. Yes. Yeah.
And he'd made his fortune in property and then lost it and then made it again and then put the money into creating Greenpeace and trying to stop the damage that was going on in the world and created this worldwide amazing organisation on pure passion. So I sailed with him and others like him.
It sounds like you're a living exponent of a lovely adage I've discovered recently, which is what's meant for you won't pass you by, as long as you stay receptive to the windows of opportunity that are maybe on a very lubricated hinge that are opening for you.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. And so sailing the Rainbow Warrior was amazing. We went to Norway and the Norwegians were very angry that we were trying to stop their boys going out to earn their living. And I was foolishly, as we're getting the cameras through, I said, oh, excuse me, please, Greenpeace. And someone said, no. And the crowd started to turn on me. And this big first mate picked me up under his arm and carried me away from the main square because it was, you know, there was stuff going on.
That being picked up by a big first mate, that's not exactly happened to us all.
Exactly. No, it doesn't happen to everyone. Yes. But you know, it's like it was an adventure. And my life, I feel, has been a lot of adventure.
Beautiful segue. My life is a life of adventure. And in fact, I know it's an extraordinary path because I was researching a little bit about you and we've got Reg Starkey in common as well. He mentioned you met Donald Trump whilst being an estate agent. It was just one of the comedy things that made.
I had lunch with Donald Trump in the 70s at the Playboy Club. He took a few estate agents out to lunch, you know, sort of like oiling us up to sort of help finding properties in England. But he was charming then.
Yes, then, back in the day.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome the great adventurer to my clearing, and it's a real privilege to have you here. So Malcolm Stern, the life's adventurer and storyteller, what is a clearing? As I'm going to take you through the normal construct of the Good Listening To podcast. So first and foremost, what is a clearing like for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspired and able to think?
I meditate every day. It's a very important part of my day. In the more lazy times, in the colder times, I'll do a guided meditation, probably by someone like Ram Dass, and do it in bed lying down. But, you know, sometimes I'll sit. But I do dedicate, when I get up in the morning, I dedicate around 20 minutes, and sometimes a bit longer, half an hour, to sitting and being, so that I'm actually gearing up for my day.
So that rituals, you make sure you start each day with that 20-minute meditation.
Yes. Yeah, that's a ritual. I have a ritual at night, but I have a hot Epsom salt bath, so I sort of, which is very good for sleep, and so I have that ritual at night as well. So before I go to bed, I completely chill out. I read. I love reading inspiring literature. In fact, tomorrow I'm doing the 10 Best Book Club. Sandy Sedgbeer, who's puts on this thing where he actually asks people to pick out 10 books that have transformed their lives, and so I'm constantly rereading some of those books as well because they're so inspiring.
Wonderful. If I may, I'm going to join you in one of those clearing examples. So which one would you like to pick? So I'm either going to come alongside you, not to interrupt you or disturb you, but I'm going to arrive with a tree next to you. So where would you like me to arrive?
I think literature, because it's such an inspiration for me.
I love that. So we're standing in a literate scape of your 10 best books. You're right there in the middle of a whole sea of writing.
Oh, can I add, sorry, Chris, just before we go there, can I also add that nature is a, you know, every day I take a 10,000 step walk, and I live in beautiful, near beautiful nature. And it's so inspiring for me to look at the trees, to feel the wind blowing, just to look at, you know, sort of the river and the forests. That's also a big part of who I am.
Lovely. So in a nutshell, in a clearing is a tree and you and me. So it's your clearing. Yep. And I'm here to shake your tree. And out of the tree fall these lovely storytelling apples for a juicy storytelling exercise, which you can crunch us through or chomp us through. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, where Malcolm Stern, you've had 5 minutes or as long as you needed to have thought about four things that have shaped you, and you've implied some of those, but do continue. Three things that inspire you. Two things that never fail to grab your attention. Ooh, squirrels, borrowed from the film Up. And then one extra quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. On the open road, let your thinking unfold. Over to you.
So I'm starting with five, am I?
No, it's 5 minutes to have thought of, and then it's 4, 3, 2, 1. So four things that have shaped you.
Four things that have shaped me. Well, one thing that shaped me was going to public school and hating it, but actually learning something of confidence around it. A second would be sailing on the Rainbow Warrior with Greenpeace and actually being with people who were dedicating their lives in the service of the earth and doing it with such integrity and impeccability. The third would be growing up in a Jewish family and actually being very, very affected by the tales of the Holocaust, which I wasn't directly affected by, but my uncle was in the Holocaust, was in concentration camps. And that has led to a lifelong interest in Holocaust literature. And the fourth thing that's shaped me would be walking into a workshop one day. I was an estate agent. I'd been in therapy for a couple of years, and I walked into a workshop one day, which was a humanistic psychology workshop. And I saw the woman running the workshop, and I thought, I can do this. I thought, you're so arrogant, you always think you can do everything. But actually, I had found my goal. I realized that dynamic that bounces around a room, the alchemy that happens in the space of the room, is actually something that has deeply touched my life, and it's been something I've been doing for the last 35 years. I've been running groups and feeling like I can play with alchemical magic and help to transform people's lives.
I love you in a healthy way, because alchemy and gold is coming up in the construct of what we're doing. So that's a lovely resonance. Also, I love the sort of full cycle there of public school. You hated it, but it gave you confidence. wind forward to walking into that holistic humanistic workshop and thinking, I could do this. Oh, stop. You're always saying that. You're too confident. But actually, confidence has equipped you extremely well to ask the right people the right questions to get a lot of what you want, I'm hearing.
Yes, it's true. Because you realize everyone's a human being. You know, there's this, we deify people. And as Robert Johnson talks about, we give away our gold. And actually, what I can see is that actually they're just human beings like us. They may have a fabulous skill, but they're not necessarily divine beings. There are two paths I can see here. So there's one path, which is the path of the monastic. So you'll see the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh. And I do see them as different because I think they've dedicated their lives to meditation, prayer, and service. And then there's the path of the marketplace. And that's where I feel that you and I are. We're out there in the world. We're growing. We're being developed by our experiences.
And indeed, I've heard it couched when you put people on a pedestal of attributed charisma. That could be very familiar to you.
Very good. And what's been great about this lockdown is actually so that people have lost, you know, the glamour's gone out a lot of life, yes, which is great. Because Alice Bailey, the theosophist, wrote in the early 20th century that actually glamour was one of the great world problems, that we were glamorized by things.
Yes.
You know, we used to have film stars and, you know, we make them into something amazing. And then we like to shoot them down as well.
We do. We like to gossip rather toxically and then we shoot them down.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we want them to be amazing and then we want them to have feet of clay.
And kindness and compassion is something that's coming through. But I know we're going to come on to that with your book, which is, you know, we will definitely talk about that. So, yes, beautifully bish, bash, bosh, clearly galloped through the four things that have shaped you. Now, three things that inspire you. And don't worry if there's any overlap in what you've already been saying. But three things that inspire you.
The music of Leonard Cohen and the exquisite songwriting ability and the capacity to touch the heart of the matter in the way of the most wonderful sage could do. And his music, ever since I saw him on stage in 2009, I was just blown away by the fact that he'd created a sort of like 15,000 people sitting together in prayer. That's what it felt like. So the music of Leonard Cohen is one. The writing of Hermann Hesse, who is the for me was the big inspiration about chronicling the spiritual path in novel, especially Narcissus and Goldman and The Glass Bead Game and Siddhartha. So those particular...
Slow down, say those names again just to really position them.
Hermann Hesse, who won the Nobel Prize in 1963, wrote Narcissus and Goldman, which is the story of a young man having to go through the whole of life to come back in the end to find the place of enlightening and awakening. Siddhartha, which is the story of the Buddha, and The Glass Bead Game, which is the story of an elite society, which are working at great depth to become to evolve into an extraordinary place.
And so have you heard of the story of the diamonds beneath our feet, by the way?
The diamonds beneath our feet, go on.
Well, if you don't mind me riffing, you've just made me think about that. It was something I've stumbled upon recently where it's an apocryphal story which is translated to different cultures, but the recent version was a South African farmsteader living in a drought-blighted landscape, desperate, opening his paper every day. Meanwhile, everyone else elsewhere is prospecting for and discovering diamonds. And so he gets irked one day. I'm trying not to say pissed off, but this is what he does. He sells his farm and goes off into the wilderness to a life of despair. The person he sells his farm to finds a rock in the floor, thinks, oh, blimey, puts that on the mantelpiece. 7 months later, someone comes to his house and says, oh, fuck me, that's the biggest diamond I've ever seen. And indeed, they start digging and the diamonds were beneath his feet all along. If you keep digging, the diamonds are beneath our feet.
How lovely. And they are. That's beautiful. Lovely sale. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so thank you for reminding me to think of that, because I had no idea I would be talking about that, which is what I love about this.
I love the interplay as well, so it's good. And the third thing that has it shaped me?
Yes.
Yes, the third thing that that inspires me. The third thing that inspires me would be going to Skyros, which I have done every year for 35 years, except last year because of the lockdown. And hopefully this year I'll go again, which is the most wonderful holistic holiday centre on the island of Skyros in Greece. And going there and actually living as a community for 2 weeks and having a timeless, spaceless time in the midst of a tropical forest at Tsitsa, where magic happens.
Beautiful. And is that something you were invited to? I know Alternatives do your event there, but did they invite you or is it your centre?
No, it's not my thing. I'm one of their regular facilitators. I've been going there since the year dot, you know, and since very early on when they were formed. And it's a place where about 60 to 80 people go for a fortnight and partake in lots of different courses.
Wonderful. Lovely. And now we're on to, I believe, two things that never fail to grab your attention.
A brilliantly played bridge hand. I'm a real bridge buff. I love the game of bridge. I think it's such an amazing game. And I think that you can start to see great intellects coupled with great intuition in the game of bridge. So a brilliantly played bridge hand would be one thing that grabs my attention.
Would you say it's akin to chess in the hand sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Very good. I like it. Chess in the hand is worth a bridge in the bush. Okay, yeah. So, and as the other thing that would never fails to grab my attention is seeing compassion in action. And remembering going to see the Dalai Lama and not understanding a word he'd said, but coming away deeply shaped and moved because I'd watched a man who was embodying compassion. And I've seen that many times in Alternatives. I've seen people who bring that through. Jack Kornfield, Ram Dass, Thich Nhat Hanh, they bring through this compassion.
So a bit of a sort of bathing in energy, really.
Yes. It's transmission. And that's what I love. I am absolutely captivated by transmission. And I have my own version of it when I'm in running groups. But actually, there is something magical about transmission because the person no longer matters. It's what comes through them that matters.
Just letting that float there. That's a sort of boom moment. Thank you very much. And now one quirky or unusual fact about you, Malcolm Stone, we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
I just thought of one. It's so embarrassing. I'm going to have to tell you it. So at Skiros, they have a cabaret at the end of the session. So people sort of do their thing. And you're guaranteed a lovely audience. You know, they've been with you for 2 weeks working with you. And one year I decided to dress up in drag and to pull in three lovely women as my backing singers. And we called ourselves Marilyn Slagg and the Raging Hot Vaginas. And it was one of the most, I could fall about laughing as I look at it. I was outrageous, but I absolutely loved playing out that role.
Marilyn
Slagg and the Raging Hot Vaginas.
I've got all your albums. I love that. Yeah. Thank you for that. Awesome. That's great.
Yes.
I can't really talk. There's a lovely adage within comedy improvisation, which is if you can't top it, stop it. So I need to shut up at this point because that was great. Just float the name of the band again because that's what we need to stop on.
Marilyn, we didn't make a record. Marilyn Slagg and the Raging Hot Vaginas.
Get in. Lovely. Now we move away from your beautiful tree and we're going to stay in the clearing and now talk about alchemy and gold. So when you are at purpose and in flow, Malcolm Stone, what is the alchemy and the gold that you are here to bring?
Well, at Esalen, which is one of the places I've taught in Big Sur in California, they say there are four golden rules for running a group. Show up, be present, get out of the way, and trust the process. And for me, the alchemy comes when you're out of the way and you're trusting the process. When I'm running a group, it's as though magic can come through, something I hadn't been able to conceive of, nor intellectually been able to create, but in the process of it emerging, then there is an alchemical process that happens and the possibilities there for transformation. And I'm not saying it's me. I'm saying I am so fortunate that I'm able to channel this, and I don't mean this in a sort of like a mystic Meg sort of way, that I'm able to channel this energy that comes through me when I'm doing that particular work.
And there's a lovely craft as part of comedy improvisation, which is called reincorporation. So just reincorporate those brilliant rules again, because as a facilitator, I was completely chiming with that.
Okay. Show up, be present, trust the process, and get out of the way.
Wonderful. And what has brought you to the current clearing you find yourself in? And please do talk about your book and I suppose the sort of, well, it's story, because I know it's profound and it's not.
It is story.
Yes.
And you said at the beginning, Chris, something about that. It's my third book and possibly the most profound. Without a doubt, it's the most profound book that I've written. Because the first two books were based on philosophy and stories and experience, but I hadn't been shaken to my core and shaken to the roots. So in 2014, my daughter, Melissa, my oldest daughter, had 10 years earlier, she'd had a serious mental breakdown and she'd rung me and she'd said, hi, Dad, I'm in a lunatic asylum. I said, very funny, Melissa. And she said, hold on a minute. She passed the phone to the nurse and she'd actually gone into intensive care psychiatric unit. And it took her a year to recover. And it seemed as though she had fully recovered and would never visit that place again. And then 10 years later, she started to get into quite a manic phase, which I found quite difficult. She came to Skiros with me a couple of times and she was wild. And you know, she was a very free spirit and beautiful. She used to dress in amazing colours and wear bright lipsticks and all sorts of things. But she came there and then soon after that, she went into one of the deepest depressions you can possibly imagine. And I have no idea what that type of depression is like. I've tasted depression. I've worked with people with depression. But that I've been told that that level of depression is so hopeless that you can't survive any longer. And I got a phone call from her mother. I was in the middle of running a group. And her mother said, Melissa's not with us anymore. And she'd gone to stay with her mother. And I said, well, where's she gone? And she said, well, she's not on the planet anymore. And it's like, oh, my God. And then I'm running this 4.5-day residential group. And I walked back after it. And one of the guys in the group was a psychotherapist. I said, David, can you take over this afternoon? This is what's happened. He tells the group. He sets up a grief circle. And he has the whole group stands holding hands. Those of you who lost a parent step into the centre of the circle. About half the group stepped into the centre of the circle. Those of you who lost a sibling, step into the circle. A couple of people stepped into the circle. Those of you who's lost a close friend, step into the circle. 4 or 5 people stepped in. Those of you who lost a child, and I was it. And in that moment, the grief landed for the first time because the shock had kept it at bay. I was in shock. And then the grief landed. And I was in this group that the group then supported me. I'd been supporting this group all year. I was running the group. But that for that session, I was given such love and such care by the group. It was one of the greatest healing moments of my life. And I wrote a poem at the end of the group, which I posted on Facebook as a way of letting people know that Melissa had died. And it wasn't a brilliant poem, but it was a poem that actually sort of allowed my experiences to, I could read it to you if you want, actually.
Please do.
Can I do that?
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So. I hope I can find it. If I can't find it quickly, I'll leave it, but I will try and read it. Yes, I wrote this poem and posted it on Facebook and had so many beautiful responses to this poem that they just, I was just so moved by what people had actually.
In your journey to now, what's the timeline here? What year did this happen?
This happened in 2014. So it happened almost 7 years ago, well, 6.5 years ago. And I can't find the poem, I'm afraid, at the moment. So I'm sorry about that, but it is in my book somewhere.
If you send it to me afterwards, I'll cut and paste it alongside what we're publishing, which is
great.
A wonderful.
And then also, am I allowed to share screen here?
Yes, of course. I might just need to quickly give you permission to do that, which I'll be very happy to do. Over to you. You can.
Because one of the things that happened after this, you know, there are lots of rituals. You know, if you can follow rituals when you've had an enormous loss, then there's something extraordinary about the creation process. For me, the book was the creation process. I met this chap called Ben Crabe in 2017 and talked to him about writing a book. And he's a
Craven, did you say, sorry?
Ben Crabe, C-R-A-I-B. Mm-hmm. And he was a publisher and an editor. So he helped me create the architecture, helped me create the structure, and then worked with me in getting the book out. And this took us about 1.5 years to create the structure, and then it only took 8 months to write the book. So the book was an amazing catharsis. But in Skiros, where I'd lost my daughter and a few months earlier and shared this with the community, they came up with the idea of this creation, which I'm about to show you here on the screen.
And do you mind me asking, was she there the year you did Marilyn and the Red Hot?
No, she wasn't there then. I would have done it in front of her. She was wild.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Is that visible?
It is. I'm looking at a beautiful, it's not called a collage, it's a stone.
It's a mosaic.
Mosaic, sorry, that's the word I just couldn't think of.
It's a mosaic, and actually there are thousands of pieces in it, or many hundreds of pieces anyway, and the whole community came together to create this mosaic with the mosaics teacher who helped me design this structure. And then the mosaic now hangs in one of the teaching circles in Atsitsa. And it's a place where I go, I feel like it's a shrine where I go and remember my daughter in that place.
For listeners who may not also be seeing the video, in loving memory of Melissa on a beautiful Greek-style mosaic, beloved daughter of Malcolm Stern, 1981 to 2014. And so appropriate that it's in Greece as like an ancient mosaic, the home of mosaics. I love that.
So that's the end of that share. But yes.
And you've been very graceful. You've not mentioned that. I know I've mentioned the title of the book, but just for our benefit, just position the book for us.
The book's called Slay Your Dragons with Compassion. And actually, one of the wonderful things is that I decided to ask for endorsements only from people who I felt a real heart connection with. So there were some quite famous speakers we'd had at Alternatives, and I didn't want them on there because I didn't feel like they were in alignment with my thinking. Uh-huh. But I had people like Eckhart Tolle, who's given me a beautiful endorsement on the front of the book, Elizabeth Gilbert, who'd lost a partner, and she and I shared what the grief process was like, and she's the author of Eat, Pray, Love. She wrote me a beautiful endorsement. And there's Craig David, who's the musician, who wrote a beautiful endorsement.
Wow.
I'm really touched by it. And Jack Cornfield, who I was on retreat with at one point, and I found him such a heartful human being. So these people all helped endorse the book, which gave me a lot of confidence that they were, the book was speaking to them, and they were writing genuine, deep endorsements.
And by the way, if I may, there is a profound resonance in your book and what you're talking about. In my own family background, I lost a sibling and my parents lost a daughter. And in fact, it was so long ago, I can talk about it very, very matter-of-factly, but my sister, my older sister, I'm the youngest of three, was killed in a car accident in 1979.
Oh, my God.
But it's totally changed the sort of DNA of the family because of the shadow of death, but also life, death. It almost like a birth of a sense of humour for me round about that time. It really wasn't about me, but it's just this idea of our journeys to now are sometimes adverse and steeped in pain, but it's all about the journey towards.
Exactly. Chris, if I can, I've just found the poem. Could I read you the poem out?
Thank you. I'm very happy that my segue has allowed that to happen. Beautiful.
Yeah, it has, because I suddenly realised it was on my notes on my computer. And I wrote this poem 2 days after Melissa had died. And I'm not a poet, and this is not great poetry, but I have managed to get my feelings into this short piece as a way of letting people know who she was to me. It's called Elegy to My Daughter Melissa, 12/9/81 to 11/12/14. Such amazing energy. You brought to life your all. You were loved and admired. You lived this life in thrall. Your path was never easy. It snaked through mud and mire. Melissa the beautiful, universally adored. I miss you in the places I've never been. We grappled with life together. You always lived your truth. You were old before your time. I wish you could return just once to those who loved you and let us know. Are you at peace, darling Melissa?
Beautiful.
Let's put my feelings through.
That's perfect poetry for me. Wow. I mean, I don't know how you measure what good poetry is, but that's so heartfelt and beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
It's heartfelt. I can't just write poetry, but I wrote something because my heart was utterly engaged in my daughter's death.
So we're in Malcolm, your clearing, and we are arriving at a beautiful place where I'm going to award you with a cake now for gracing us with your presence here in the Good Listening To podcast clearing. And this is a cake whereby that you're going to be able to put a cherry on the cake, and you're giving me so many cherries anyway. So anyway, here we go. The cherry on the cake is open to interpretation as a final storytelling metaphor. It can be the best piece of advice you've ever been given. It could be advice you might give to your younger self, something else you might like to say to Melissa, whatever. And to get existential further, inspired by Shakespeare's "All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players, and each man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages." How would you like to be remembered? What would you like your legacy to be? Just wherever you'd like to go with the legacy of this conversation.
Well, I think what I'd like my legacy to be was that my life was lived, a lot of my life was lived in service, and that I got great joy from the service that I was able to bring. And I had great joy in watching people transform who were part of my circles, my groups. So that's amazing. I think I would like to be remembered as someone who cared, who has a compassionate heart, and is deeply touched by things. I'd like to be remembered as someone who's actually taken risks in his life and actually sort of left being an estate agent, a comfortable role, to search for gold, and found gold without knowing where I was going to find gold and what it was going to be. And I think my advice to my younger self would be it would be this great story. So can I tell you this little teaching story as advice to my younger self? Just this second thought of it. So, and I don't know if this story is true or not, but it's so funny. I just thought I'd tell it. So a guy I knew who was a very big workshop leader, his wife left him for another woman. And he was so outraged, not just that she'd left him, but that she changed sexual deviation as far as he was concerned. And he couldn't get it out of his head, and he was ranting and raging. And he was told to go and see a wise man who lived in the jungles in Southeast Asia somewhere. So he made this big pilgrimage to this wise man. And finally, having found his way to this wise man, he sat in front of him as the man sat there impassively. And he told him his whole big story. And at the end of the story, the wise man picked up a feather, tapped him on the shoulder, and said, "Lighten up, asshole." And so that would be my cherry on the cake. Lighten up, asshole. Don't get too caught up in all the stuff. We're going to get through it. We're going to get through everything that happens to us. And we're going to arrive sometime at the place where we're no longer incorporated in a human being shape or form. But actually, this is a rich journey. Take the journey, gather some friends around you, and learn from every experience you go through in life.
If I may say, what I so love about that story was the grace of the feather and the brick of the statement, "Lighten up, asshole."
I love the sublime, the profound and the profane living together.
And it's comedy as surprise, which is something I'm very passionate about as well. So, wow. Thank you for that wonderful story. Is there anything else you'd like to say before I find out where else we can find out about you on the internet?
I would like to say that I miss Melissa every day. And a great Buddhist master who's told his teachers that everything was illusion, lost his son. And one of his students came out into the garden, was walking with him. And he said, "Master, you're crying." He said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Because I lost my son." He said, "But you teach us that everything is illusion." He said, "And the death of a child is the biggest illusion." So that's the piece I'd like to say about, that's my cherry on the cake. And Melissa, I loved you and I still love you. And you're a big part of my being. And I thank you for whatever support you gave me bringing this book through. I felt it was inspired by you.
So you've been listening to the Good Listening To podcast. It's been my absolute privilege to welcome Malcolm Stern. Thank you so much, and good night. So my sincere thanks to you for listening and to Malcolm Stern in that special Good Books episode of the Good Listening to Show and Podcast. If you'd like to listen to many more episodes, don't forget the podcast proper is hosted on Buzzsprout. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, please do so. And on Twitter and Instagram, it's at that Chris Grimes. You can also go to the swanky new Good Listening to Show YouTube channel as well, if you'd prefer to also watch, listen to the interviews that I've been doing here on the podcast too. Also, wherever you do get your podcasts, please do comment and rate my podcast too, as I would very much welcome your feedback. Thank you very much indeed. And here comes the outro and my son Stan. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Good Listening to Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.
So I've been doing lots of stuff online since the book's been published. Lots in America, doing various radio broadcasts and some TV stuff, Sky News, quite a few other things. And I would say that without a doubt, this is the best interview I've had. Not because it's the best I've been, but because you, Chris, as the interviewer, managed to go to some beautiful places with me, drew out the best in me. I told stories I would never dream of telling on, you know, to the world at large. Because actually I trusted you and I trust the holding that you give. And I also want to say that the structure that you've created, the architecture, which is what bended for me in writing my book, the structure you've created is a brilliant way of drawing out a whole range of different facets of us as human beings. So it's not a, you know, I loved it. I just think you have created something that's got extreme value. And I really hope I can help support you in getting this out there in the world where it belongs.